Mr. Creighton, counsel, Mr. Wood, my associate, Justin Gaffney. I apologize on behalf of Dr. Bodenstab, who couldn't be present, but he's on call today with medical procedures, and sometimes medicine does trump law. Consistent throughout the Cook County's arguments in this litigation is their position that Dr. Bodenstab is unworthy of your consideration. Consistently, they set forth snippets of information and statements, many of which are explainable, many of which are subject to tribal issues of fact, for the proposition that Dr. Bodenstab is not someone that you should consider here, and in essence, that Dr. Bodenstab is not someone that deserves to have the law followed. But the fact of the matter is that Dr. Bodenstab is worthy of your consideration. If I may momentarily just suggest that the record reflects that Dr. Bodenstab is a veteran of a foreign war, Army MD in Vietnam, and as Dr. Kapoor noted, he had his supporters at Cook County Hospital, clearly. The PRC people that treated him described him as a, quote, fascinating gentleman. He's a licensed attorney. I ask that you not hold that against him. He apparently, based on the record, has the support of the county board. He has high standards, moral, ethical, and legal, and certainly a fearless adherence to principles. And even the lady, Ms. Wengler, who set off the siren from Seattle, who's known him for 17 years, describes him this way, a champion for those who need help, an advocate's heart, empathetic, a life-giving person. Dr. Wallace.
What does any of this have to do with the legal issues at hand?
Let me proceed, Your Honor. I apologize. Your Honor, the county will say, they'll use the term direct threat. They'll use the term death threat. But the evidence is that there was no threat. There was no death threat. This off-duty, at-home, bedroom talk with high emotions with Ms. Wenger was philosophical, conjectural, maybe intended to bring an emotional response, conditional syllogisms with no literal meaning, if-then propositions. Was it stupid? Probably. Was it negligent? Maybe. But was it a threat? No. It was Ms. Wengler, not Dr. Bodenstab, who used the name Dr. Winnie in conjunction with this philosophical discussion. Had they talked of Dr. Winnie during this conversation? Yes. They spoke of the fact that Dr. Winnie had retired. He was no longer at County Hospital, that he and his gang were gone. They had a discussion regarding his retirement policy. Then they had the philosophical discussion, the if-then discussion. And then it was Ms. Wengler who put that together and made a report based upon the proposition that she thought that maybe Dr. Bodenstab would be threatening people at Cook County Hospital. The county relies on a few facts for their proposition that they had an honest belief that Dr. Bodenstab had committed a threat. A review of those shows that there's tribal issues of fact on all of them. They use the term the fact that Dr. Langer suggests that he heard from the FBI agent that it was described as a credible threat. But when the FBI agent was deposed, he denied that. He did not say that it was a credible threat. And that was Agent Quinn. Dr. Langer then said, well, I relied upon the fact that in the PRC report that they used the term thematically consistent in describing the conversation that Dr. Bodenstab had with Ms. Wengler. But Dr. Langer then notes, and I think this is significant in light of the county's honest belief defense, that he says that whatever that means, so even Dr. Langer didn't know what the thematically consistent words within the PRC report was intended to convey. And Dr. Wallace, I was going to say, also flew into Chicago to testify, and she couldn't say enough good things about Dr. Bodenstab, but most importantly, she was upset by virtue of the fact that her authored words, the caveat language, the however language, which was intended to mean from her that please, Cook County Hospital, do not harass this doctor, was used against him. However, Cook County Hospital and none of their administrators engaged in the interactive process or asked further what PRC meant by some of these terms. Dr. Langer relies upon the police reports. Yes, there were police reports, but the police authorities who were deposed basically had nothing beyond the fact that there was this initial report. Dr. Bodenstab was interviewed by the police authorities and then released to return to work in Stanter and then he continued to work for a period of time until subsequently defended. The hearing officer ultimately determined we've established no statement of a desire to do away with anybody. It is also important to know, Your Honors, the 180s, the shifting sands, the switches that the county has engaged in, which has also resulted in inconsistent arguments in their briefs. It started in March of 2002 when the county said, we are going to address this matter as a health issue. And a health issue understandable in light of the fact that Dr. Bodenstab was suffering from a work-related tuberculosis and was taking very strong medications as a result thereof. And some doctors have opined that it's the tuberculosis medications that may have jumbled him at one point in time. But in event in March of 2002, it was a health issue. And then, after Dr. Bodenstab went to the PRC, was initially evaluated and then engaged in treatment there on his own recourse, on his own dime, treated for a substantial period of time, resulting in the release that he brought to Cook County Hospital, submitted to the Employee Health Services Department, the agency that's designed by their own ordinance and their own regulation to make a decision, Dr. Bush and Dr. Powell releasing him subject to restrictions. It was then and only then, and then after Dr. Bodenstab wrote a letter to Lacey Thomas, sent a copy to Mr. Devine and Commissioner Quigley asking to return to work, it was then and only then that the county switched gears. The county switched gears and said it's no longer an employee health issue. Now we have a conduct issue. Now we are charging you with a quote-unquote major cause infraction under our conduct policy. And after Dr. Bodenstab appealed that conduct policy allegation and went through the process and Judge Hibbler allowed us to proceed to a hearing before the hearing officer, and only after the hearing officer made the determination that the conduct does not justify discipline. And the hearing officer made the conclusion and stated on the record that we've established that there's no basis for a conduct violation here. It was then and only then that the county then switched gears again and said, now we have a direct threat analysis that we'd like to present. And it was then and only then that the county filed their motion for leave to file affirmative defenses in a litigation then pending. Judge Shader would say, mend the hold. This court has said on multiple occasions that shifting, flip-flopping stances of this nature is indicative of pretext. Your Honors, moving forward to the First Amendment claim, I would like to first apologize for my inaccurate suggestion of the but-for test because this Begala versus Hall case is the correct case. The motivating or substantial factor is the appropriate test, and I apologize for that mistake. But in regards to the other aspects of the First Amendment claim, I will say that a document was placed of record. It was a summary of Dr. Bodenstab's First Amendment free speech. There are numerous documents that are not of record. None of the free speech really documents are of record. The reason why is because the county didn't file for summary judgment, and Dr. Bodenstab's response said directly, there's no need to respond to this. We must be moving towards a trial on this issue. The summary document was place of record. Why? Because it supported Dr. Bodenstab's argument on his ADA claim. It supported the argument that Dr. Bodenstab advanced, that Dr. Bodenstab was only a, quote, direct threat, unquote, to report and document malfeasance when he saw it. That was the only direct threat that he was. And the conversation, the soliloquy that he had for the 15 or 20 minutes with Dr. Kapoor in November of 2002 enforces that proposition. It was Dr. Kapoor who indicated to Dr. Bodenstab that there's a concern. There's a concern at Cook County Hospital. Now that Dr. Winnie, who was brought up on charges largely because of Dr. Bodenstab and was submitted to peer review and then had to, quote, unhappily retire, unquote, it was then and only then, and then Dr. Bodenstab's attempt to return to work, that the hospital administration was concerned from the surgeons that if Dr. Bodenstab returns and continues to document malfeasance at Cook County Hospital, I might be next. And I think that's a reasonable presumption that we could make from this record, Your Honors. And so as a result, I placed that summary document, but not the actual exhibits themselves. This court doesn't have the opportunity to read his First Amendment speech. And these are not the documents that refer to his own personal matters. They're not the December 2002 letters. These are letters about what's transpiring at Cook County Hospital that's distributed and disseminated to the highest levels of Cook County Hospital Administration, as well as the Risk Management Department, some of which went to President Strozier, Ruth Rothstein, and the county board. Your Honors, the timeliness aspect of these documents are significant in light of the fact that it was when he was attempting to return after Dr. Winnie was forced to retire because of the charges leveled against him that this was brought up by Dr. Kapoor as a reasoning why Cook County Hospital was not comfortable with bringing him back to work with surgeons who had engaged in ghost surgery and other malfeasance. And I see I'm in my rebuttal time. I'll move quickly through a couple more points, if I may. In terms of the common law certiorari claim, Your Honor, I think there are multiple reasons why the hearing officer was completely out of bounds when the hearing officer attempted to make a determination regarding a fitness for duty decision. It's significant and important to note that the only person who has ever said that Dr. Bodenstab is subject to termination or permanently precluded from Cook County Hospital is the hearing officer Krakowski. Even the hospital administration had never said that. They merely said, we're bringing you up on conduct charges, and they merely said that at this time, and this is supported by Dr. Kapoor, at this time, at this moment in time, we are not allowing you to return to work. And Dr. Kapoor was saying that he was not writing him off, but yet he was not suggesting that he return to work at that time. I want to just mention one thing regarding procedural due process. I do believe that Dr. Bodenstab was entitled at least to a truncated Laudermill hearing pertaining to the issue that he was ultimately found to be fired for by the hearing officer. He never received that. He received a very adequate hearing regarding the conduct charge, but it wasn't the conduct charge that resulted in the dismissal. It was the fitness for duty. So he never got a procedural due process.
Just take a moment to explain the difference of that.
Between
the conduct and the fitness for duty. I'm not sure I understand that distinction.
Yes, he was charged by the hospital administration with a conduct offense, a major cause infraction. He had a adequate Laudermill hearing on that charge. He was given an opportunity to speak before the hospital administration. He then appealed that decision and went up before the hearing appeals officer. The hearing appeals officer then made a determination that that's not subject to dismissal. There's no conduct violation here. However, notwithstanding the fact that even ASA Patrick Blanchard argued with the hearing officer went to another point and said, yes, but what about this issue of whether or not you're fit for duty? What about that? Maybe I should make a decision on that issue. But Dr. Bodenstab was never charged with being unfit for duty in terms of that process, the appeal process.
You've lost me. What would be the context of a not fit for duty apart from the conduct? His mental state, his physical state?
His mental state as it existed as of the time he returned from PRC. That's the fitness for duty determination that needed to be made. He had been treated for a substantial period of time. He came back with a release.
So are you suggesting it should have been an expanded hearing that spoke to that?
Well, I'm suggesting that if you're going to make a determination, if a hearing officer is going to make a determination outside the bounds of what was charged, he should have been brought up on new charges and had an opportunity to have a truncated Laudermill hearing. Thank you. I'll reserve for my remaining minutes, if I may. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Creighton.
If the court please, and counsel, Mr. Gaffney, the hospital under the ADA did have the burden of proof to show that there was a direct threat to employees and patients at the hospital. In regards to Mr. Gaffney's statements as to what the hospital relied on, the police reports are set forth in the appendix to my brief, as well as the PRC report that verifies that Dr. Bodenstab acknowledged during his treatment that, in fact, he had made the statements. But there are two other facts in the record that also supported the hospital basis to find that, in fact, the threats were made. And one was, and these are in the record, one is a letter of December 22nd of 2002 Dr. Bodenstab's letter to Mr. Thomas, the hospital director, in regards to his explanation as to why Ms. Wingler was wrong in her characterization of the conversation. And one of the quotes that how Dr. Bodenstab characterized his conversation was, quote, "If I have metastases, maybe I will take some people with me on the journey." And that certainly is a corroborative of the other evidence in this case as to the death threat. And that was a letter Dr. Bodenstab sent to Mr. Thomas, the hospital director. Secondly, in regards to the deposition that Dr. Bodenstab gave in this case, that was not before the hospital, but it would be in evidence before a jury. He stated, and again, paraphrasing what he had the conversation with Mr. Wengler, said, "Maybe it wouldn't be so bad being dead if you've got metastases. They shoot horses, don't they? Well, maybe I'll take some people with me if I have cancer, if I found a head metastases." So this record is replete with evidence that, in fact, the threats were made by Dr. Bodenstab.
He doesn't deny that, does he? As far as that phone conversation.
He doesn't deny having the phone conversation. He denies in the brief making threats.
He didn't say. He says he did not say what
yes,
she said
that,
he said.
That's the position he took in the briefs, that the statements were not made. I'd like to briefly address the, I think what, maybe the Judge Flom's questions in regards to the hearing that, in regards to the hearing in regards to discharge to Dr. Bodenstab, I'd like to address that. The issue of the fact of this report from the PRC that Dr. Bodenstab was found not recommended to return to a politically, personally, interpersonally stressful situation was always an issue in regards to the competency of him returning to work. It is first addressed in the very letter of charges in January by Dr. Langer to Dr. Bodenstab. It's set forth in there. It is in a section that first discusses the fact that Dr. Bodenstab asked for an accommodation, but then that quote is set forth out in the final sentence in that paragraph on the charges is that the hospital has determined that you present a risk to the patients or to the employees or to the workplace, I think is exactly put in that letter. Again, when after the first the preliminary Watermill hearing, there was a when the discharge occurred, there was a discharge letter written by Mr. Thomas to Dr. Bodenstab, where again that language was referenced in the letter, or the PRC report was referenced in the letter as a basis as to why he was being terminated. Going back to then into the actual hearing that took place in regards to the discharge, the statement from Dr. Wallace at the PRC that Dr. Bodenstab is not recommended to go back to a situation that is politically, interpersonally, or politically, interpersonally, or emotionally charged was put into evidence by the plaintiff. It's Exhibits 14 to the plaintiff's exhibits in support of the grievant during the hearing. So we've got the plaintiff now taking the position that he was surprised and fouled by his own evidence that he put in. Obviously, they were aware of it as an issue, and obviously it was presented to the hearing officer as an issue in the case by the plaintiff himself. This is the pendant state law claim, so we're going by state law. And I'd point out that we have the Abrahamson case, but basically that stands for two propositions that are useful here. One is that the notice of charges be not written with the same particularity that you would have in a lawsuit. And again, as I referenced, the actual issue of the politically, interpersonally, emotionally charged statement was right from the beginning and in the initial charges. And secondly, there is if there's any basis in the record that supports the decision, then the decision should be upheld. And in this case, I'd like to go back to how Illinois explains cause. And I've cited the case in my brief, but cause is some substantial shortcoming that renders the employee's continuance in employment detrimental to the discipline and efficiency of service. An agency's determination of cause is given great deference. I suggest in this case that the hospital had every major concern to initiate the discipline proceedings against Dr. Bodenstab, that it would have been irresponsible and dangerous for the hospital under these circumstances not to first investigate it by sending him for the psychiatric evaluation and then proceed on the basis of the evidence before it to discharge the doctor. He's a physician working in an emergency room. Going back to the hearing officer's finding in the last sentence, he finds that Dr. Bodenstab presented a risk to the operation of the hospital, referring to the surgical operations of the hospital, this was an anesthesiologist, and a risk to coworkers. And the evidence in the record supported that. That is a good that fits well within the Illinois definition of cause. And the hearing officer's decision was based on evidence in the record. Should be affirmed on that basis. I'd like to briefly address the First Amendment issue in regards to that. And in the brief, the plaintiff points out that it wasn't addressed in the initial motion by defendants for summary judgment, and it wasn't because it was one of 26 paragraphs in count two of the Third Amendment complaint that it just had general procedural due process. However, the plaintiff thereupon their own presented an outline, and there's two in the record on it, of each of the 41 free speech issues that they claim, and they didn't attach the actual exhibit, but they did attach an explanation, and this is something they introduced into the record in response to the motion for summary judgment, so it was properly before Judge Hibbler, and he correctly looked at those 41 allegations that were contained, and he found that they were remote in time. They were dealing simply with issues that are involved in internal employment, which under Garcetti are not protected speech. And his rulings on that issue were properly before him and were properly ruled upon as not being a basis. Also under Garcetti, the plaintiff has the burden of proof that the protected speech was the cause of the impermissible discharge. And in this case, there's overwhelming evidence that, in fact, the hospital acted upon the death threats, upon the evaluation by the PRC that he was not fit to practice as an anesthesiologist in emotionally stressed situations. I'd also point out Dr. Langer explained that during the third step hearing, this man was in an emergency, he's a physician in an emergency room, and there's no way that an employer, much less a hospital, could ever provide a work environment that not on occasion is going to be politically, emotionally, or interpersonally stressed, especially in an emergency room. I submit that the record in this case is replete that there was adequate, more than adequate basis, not only adequate basis for the hospital to discharge Dr. Bodenstab, but it was morally and legally incumbent upon them to do so with the information they had all the way from the death threats to the psychiatric evaluations that are in replete in evidence in this case. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Creighton. Anything further, Mr. Gaffney?
Your Honor, if I may, in terms of the allegations of the threat, the conversation with Ms. Wengler, what Dr. Bodenstab has always admitted from day one, beginning with his December 2002 letter, is that he had a conversation with Ms. Wengler where they talked about, you know, if-then propositions, these conditional syllogisms. He's always admitted, and we've always admitted, that he made this statement, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if you were dead. They shoot horses, don't they? And he's always admitted that statement. But he's never threatened a person. He never threatened a human being. He never threatened Dr. Winnie. He never threatened anyone at Cook County Hospital. It was only Ms. Wengler who purported to put two and two together and make this police report. Now, in terms of the other issues, Your Honor, in terms of the ADA issue, I mean, obviously, it's the burden of proof under an affirmative defense for the county to establish a direct threat here. I mean, they acknowledge various things. They acknowledge that he requested an accommodation. They've never...
Thank you, Mr. Gaffney.
Thank you very much. Sorry.
The case is taken under advisement.